From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Monday, September 18th, 2017. And on this day, the state wants to shift services for 3 to 5 year old children with disabilities back to local school districts. Some are worried about how local schools would pay for that. And we'll look at the response to Interior Secretary Zinke's recommendations for Katahdin Woods and Waters. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
First tonight, supporters of Maine's Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument say a leaked memo from Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke to the White House is confusing and only creates more economic uncertainty in the region. Leaked to the media outlets 3 weeks after it was supposed to be made public, the memo recommends downsizing several national monuments and amending others to allow for commercial fishing, timber harvesting, and other traditional uses. Susan Sharon has more.
In his memo to President Trump, Zinke proposes to amend the proclamation establishing Katahdin Woods and Waters to, quote, promote a healthy forest through active timber management. He goes on to say that the monument's management plan should be revised to prioritize public access, traditional use, and hunting and fishing rights. But there is no completed management plan. The public process for establishing one is currently underway. So Kathy Johnson of the Natural Resources Council of Maine says that point needs clarification, and so does Zinke's vision of timber harvesting.
You know, if active timber harvesting means to the secretary managing timber to restore a healthy natural forest, build trails or roads for educational purposes, then that's all consistent with the monument's purpose.
But if he envisions commercial timber harvesting that is similar to what is taking place on industrial forest lands throughout the North Woods, then Johnson says there's a problem.
That is not consistent with the intent of the monument, and we believe it's a clear violation of law.
Commercial timber harvesting is not permitted in national parks, and that's why Lucas St. Clair is perplexed by Zinke's recommendation for Katahdin Woods and Waters. St. Clair's Family Foundation donated the property to the federal government, specifically for recreation and conservation, unimpaired for future generations' enjoyment. In a recent telephone conversation with Zinke, St. Clair says he was told that any timber harvesting on the property would be limited. He finds the memo vague.
It really is not, it's not clear on how they're going to do what they're going to do and what they're going to do.
Zinke has proposed reducing the size of at least 3 national monuments under review by order of President Trump and amending the proclamations of 10 of them, including Maine's. National environmental groups, such as Defenders of Wildlife, are concerned that some could be opened up for oil and gas exploration and coal mining, as well as timber harvesting. In several marine monuments, Zinke is also proposing to allow commercial fishing. Amy DeLack, a senior policy analyst with the Washington, D.C.-based Defenders Group, says if the president follows through with the recommendations, a legal response is likely.
It is our read of the various statutes involved that the president does not have the authority to either revoke or to substantially amend the boundaries to shrink any monuments.
In a written statement, Maine Congresswoman Shelley Pingree took issue with the economic uncertainty created by Zinke's leaked memo. She also criticized what she said was a lack of transparency in the monument review process. Of the more than 260,000 comments received by the Interior Department on the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument, nearly all of them were in support. Fewer than 100 were in opposition. They included Maine Governor Paul LePage and Maine Congressman Bruce Poliquin, who welcomed Zinke's recommendations. In a written statement, Poliquin said, "They strike the right balance in protecting Maine jobs and Maine's way of life." For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Among the monuments on which Secretary Zinke says he wants changes is the Northeast Canyons and Seamounts National Monument. It's the first marine monument established in the Atlantic. Fred Bever has details.
In his memo to the White House, published in the Washington Post, Secretary Zinke says that he would not ban commercial fishing in the remote area, but would have it be administered by the New England Fisheries Management Council. Conservation groups and others say that's a bad idea. Zach Cliver is lead naturalist at the Bar Harbor Whale Watch Company.
If we have some neutral and pristine ocean environments that aren't stressed, we can study the impact of ocean acidification and climate change, and that's going to help fishing communities. We need to know, will that ecological diversity and biodiversity help create a more stable marine environment?
Some fishermen's groups in New England opposed the monument's designation last year. A spokeswoman for the Fisheries Council says it is working on rules that would freeze the footprint where commercial fishing is currently allowed in Atlantic slopes and canyons, including in some parts of the monument, but would not bar it altogether. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
The number of people dying from drug overdoses in Maine this year is on pace with last year, when 370 lives were lost. Now some advocates are calling for stronger local action to address the opioid epidemic. Patty White has more.
Amazing grace.
On Monday morning, advocates, family members, and friends of people affected by substance use disorder sang as they placed 38 roses on the steps of Lewiston City Hall, one for each city resident who's died from a drug overdose in the past 2 years. Some supporters at the event say they lost loved ones from surrounding communities. Sherry Monteith says her 30-year-old sister, Sarah Cookson, who lived in Farmingdale, became addicted to opioids after undergoing surgery. Monteith says she tried to find help, but her sister didn't have health insurance.
That's why, when we went to treatment programs, we could not afford any of the options. One cost $15,000. We were told to take out a second mortgage in our home to afford it. That put us in a position of having to choose between the financial security of my own two children and the health of my sister, a choice no one should have to make. We decided we couldn't afford it and thought we had more time to figure out other options for Sarah.
But a few months later, Sarah, who had a 13-year-old daughter, died from an overdose. Monteith wants leaders at the municipal level to do more to help people with substance use disorder.
I'm speaking today in hopes my story will urge elected officials to take proactive action to assist those who need treatment now and avoid another tragedy like the loss our family has experienced.
Even though every community in the state has been affected by this epidemic, we still have not built the political will to truly address it.
Ben Chin, who's running for mayor of Lewiston this November, criticized the city for failing to prioritize the opioid epidemic and says officials should form a stakeholder group to take action. Marty O'Brien of Gray Street Recovery Services says it's clear that new strategies are needed.
We're here today not to bring up what our community isn't doing, but how we can join together with the community to provide some solutions.
29-year-old Tracy Bouchard of Brunswick is currently in treatment at Gray Street. She came to the Lewiston event because in the past month, she's lost three friends to drug overdose deaths. One included a friend she'd known since elementary school.
Going to his funeral and watching his parents and his three small children, and it's just so sad.
Bouchard says she's fortunate to be in treatment and that everyone who needs it should have access as well. Lewiston Mayor Robert McDonald did not respond to a request for comment. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Finally today, the State Department of Education is proposing to shift the responsibility for providing services for 3 to 5 year old children with disabilities back to local school districts. The state says the current system's not working, but critics of the proposed change say it could place a larger financial burden on local schools. Robbie Feinberg has our story.
Until they're 5 years old, Maine children with disabilities currently get services like speech therapy and other assistance through a program called Child Development Services. The model is relatively unique to Maine, but Jan Breton, the Department of Education's Director of Special Services, says it's not working for some kids. And that's why the department is proposing that those services become the obligation of local districts.
The primary reason is that we believe it's going to be better for children, in that they won't have as many transitions. They would be served by people in the in the community, their public schools.
Breton says Child Development Services routinely runs multi-million dollar deficits and that the agency has struggled to fill positions due to low pay. That's left some students waiting a long time for services, which she says is against the law. And some school officials across the state see the benefits of the proposed change. At RSU 10 in Rumford, Superintendent Deb Alden says barriers such as transportation costs and staff shortages keep some students with disabilities from getting the services they need.
And even though they may be qualified for services, they weren't able to get the services.
Alden says that's why RSU 10 agreed to become a pilot site for this new model. But she says she is worried about the proposal's quick timeline. She's unsure how her district will find the staff and space to take on these new students and get it approved by the local school board in less than a year.
To rush it, to say it's going to happen by July 1st of 2018 is really rushing it.
And Alden and other officials are even more concerned about where the funding for this new plan will come from. The State Department of Education says federal funds cover much of the costs under the current model, and the state picks up the rest. But it's unclear whether the state will continue to pay that cost under the new system. Rita Furlow, a senior policy analyst with the Maine Children's Alliance, says she's concerned that the state might try to shift the costs back to local taxpayers.
I hope that this isn't just a shift to the property tax, because that's just not going to be helpful in the long run for Maine families and kids.
And others fear that while the state might continue to fund these services, they could distribute them under the statewide school funding formula. Democrat Rebecca Millett, a co-chair of Maine's Legislative Children's Caucus, says that would hurt some communities.
That's very concerning for me because, you know, for some districts, that means they're going to get no money practically.
Jim Breton of the DOE says the department is still working out how funds will be distributed under the new proposal. But
our intent is to make this as painless as possible financially. We're talking about how to make it fit in the funding model in a way that supports schools financially and doesn't create a huge financial burden for them.
The department is expected to forward a formal proposal to the legislature for consideration next year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And education reporting on Maine Public Radio, supported by a grant from the Nellie Mae Education Foundation. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, September 18th, 2017. Thanks to our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.